Wonderful.
Yeah.
Aloha, good morning, everyone. Welcome to our meeting today. My name is Bill Souza. I am the vice chair of the committee. Our chair is unavailable today, so we will begin our meeting. First off, before we go any further, I'd like to introduce to you our new board member, Dr. Trish Swanson. There.
Aloha.
Hi.
And we also, sad to say, we also lost Ikaika Bantanino, who resigned due to a very heavy schedule he had. Thank them both. And thank you very much for being here with us today. First off, the approval of the agenda for Friday, November 22nd. Is there a motion, please?
I move to approve.
Yeah.
I'll second that.
Been moved. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
It's approved. Thank you. Next, the minutes approval that you had in the election there, amendments of July 25th. Limited meeting minutes, the approval also of the 26th, the meeting minutes there. We'll take these two at a time. There will be a motion for the first two minutes, please.
Move to approve the minutes from the limited meeting and the this meeting on the 25th and 26th.
Seconded.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. The next two, approval and amendment on August 30th, limited meeting, and the August 30th meeting minutes. Let's would someone like to entertain the motion?
I move that we approve the August 30th limited meeting and the August 30th meeting minutes.
Second.
Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Thank you all very much. Next, we're going to move on to the nominations. And the first nomination we have, before we go forward, we have to put the nomination, if I recall, please brief me. We, Dan, do I have to, what's his name? Alan, sorry. Do we just, I forget now, do we just have him present it and then we ask for the nomination to put it on for discussion?
So, yeah, so he presents, you ask for any other testimony, and then you, you have, at that point, the board asks the question if they have any of the presenter or anybody else who provided testimony, and then you go to discussion and then you get a nomination, a motion. Then discussion.
Okay, sir.
Aloha, good morning. My name is Thomas Olenello, an architectural historian here in Honolulu. This case was originally deferred from the Historic Places Review Board that occurred on November 30th, 2018. The Mary P. Bright House is being nominated to the Hawaii Register of Historic Places under criteria A and B. The nomination has been prepared to recognize the significance of a property. It is the best example of a mid-century modern dwelling that was built for and occupied by Native Hawaiians in the Lahaina NHL. There are only two other extant MCM houses in the district that were erected for Native Hawaiian families, and those were the Lindsay and the Common Dwelling. The house was paid for by James Cleverly Bright, who is a retired Luna and Baldwin Packers, a pineapple cannery located in the vicinity of Malo Wharf and built for his wife, Mary Ka'aikaunapuni Ka'a Bright, and she was known familiarly as Mary P. Bright. Mary acquired the lot in 1950. The house was built in 1963. And she resided there until her death in 1987. The dwelling embodies progressive attitudes of Native Hawaiians who adopted modern styles of housing from the U.S. mainland, but who were also culturally conservative. Mary P. Bright exemplified this in her personal life. given her genealogy, she appears to have participated in informal networks that were established by the elite class. She also maintained her native Hawaiian language, as well as held certain aspects of traditional knowledge in secret. The Mary Q. Bright was housed with a recognized Anisei part-time contractor from Honolulu named Sadao Takayama, along with part-time subs that included plumber Masao Takayama and electrician Yoshiko Matsuda, using plans, specs, and materials provided by A&B Commercial in Kahului. The Mary Q. Bright House shares character with tiny teachers with other Lahaina contemporary mid-century modern houses. On the top left, 1169 Lahi Place, Brooklyn 1957. On the top right, 187 Holly Street, Brooklyn 1958. In the middle, 157 Prison Street, built in 1959. And on the bottom, Mary Q. Bright House, 429 Front Street, built in 1963. The Mary P. Bright House appears to have been the first mid-century modern dwelling erected by a native Hawaiian family in Lahaina, and is the best preserved example of the house type in the NHL. The perimeter is enclosed by lava rock walls that appear to have been built in the 1920s. The carport is located toward the front of the parcel, while the dwelling is set back and sited closer to the ocean. A small Ohana unit that has been altered where the Brights lived before the house was built is located near the shore. The Mary Q. Bright House retains integrity of location, although its setting has changed. And the mansion on the left side of the picture is what really constitutes the threat for the seashore properties in the Lahaina NHL. We constantly find that new owners will purchase a historic house, tear it down, and build something that maximizes footprint available for the property. That's another reason why it's probably really important to preserve. The facades that are visible from the public right-of-way retain integrity of design, massing, fenestration materials. This is a photograph of the house taken in 2002 before the rehabilitation was initiated. Exterior surfaces such as concrete masonry walls have been retained without modification, and the original fenestration has been largely maintained. Modern sash has been installed on the interior, that is behind the original Jalousi windows, so that they are not visible from the public right away. Plywood gable ends have been replaced in kind because of termite damage, along with wood trees and barge boards. Plate heights and roof slopes have been maintained as constructed. On the side and rear facades, original massing, exterior finishes, roof forms, and slopes remain intact. Demonstration has been modified with the installation of replacement doors at three locations. These are out of view of the public right of way. With the exception of glass block that has been installed in the bathroom window, modern sash has been installed on the interior, again behind original Jalousi windows. Plywood gable ends have been replaced in kind because of termite damage, along with wood frieze and barge boards. Floor plan of the Mary Q. Bright House has been largely retained, as well as the original footprint. So in our last presentation, we have extensions coming off from the garage. Those are not built. Those were permanent at the time. For the National Register Bulletin 15, page 46, this property is not defined by its interior, such as a theater or an ornate auditorium. It is what it is. It is a simple, modest, contemporary, mid-century modern dwelling. Consequently, interior finishes. At the time, if the owner took possession, it was really simple. They were exposed CMU walls, there was no woodwork, there were mechanic seams, and there were linoleum floors. Consequently, those interior finishes have been upgraded to 21st century standards. Mechanic and the linoleum have been replaced, and the ceiling height has been raised. The rehabilitation of the Mary Q. Bright House has been informed so that the integrity of design, materials, workmanship, as well as feeling and association has been maintained. Consequently, the property continues to express the historic character and aesthetic sense of time in which it was built, and is sufficiently intact to convey this association to the neighborhood. Some of the vegetation, such as noni, mango, or croton, that Mary Lou Bright planted and maintained is still located in the front side and rear yards, and the palm trees are still there. The rock walls in the front rear and one side yard of the property are still there. The building's original massing and plan are intact. The front facade is intact. The same demonstration exists. The same slab door is there. It is in kind and replaced. It has the same duvet windows, the same roofing material, exposed after panels, gable end details, the same carport with decorative concrete blocks. Although the body and trim colors are different, when we look at the dwelling from the street, we are still looking at the house of Mary Drew Bright and her Ohana saw it when she lived there. We asked her to board this is property on the Hawaii Register of Historic Places.
Thank you very much. Are there any other further testimony?
Yes.
Aloha, my uncle. My name is Annalise Keeler. I am the Cultural Resources Planner with the County of Maui Department of Planning. I staff the Cultural Resources Commission, and I wanted to share with the board that the Cultural Resources Commission reviewed this nomination at their July 3rd meeting. They found the house to meet the criteria for nomination and recommended that it be listed in the Hawaii Register of Historic Places. And their letter to Mayor Victorino should be in your packets, as well as a letter from Mayor Victorino, Michael Victorino, who found that, who upheld the recommendation of the Cultural Resources Commission, which is that the property meets the criteria for nomination and that it should be listed in the Hawaii Register. In closing, I just wanted to read a couple of paragraphs about the home significance that I put into my staff report to the Cultural Resources Commission. Historically, the Mary P. Bright House is significant for its association with several important trends that involve improving the living conditions of Maui's non-Euro American plantation labor population, transitioning from rental housing provided by a plantation company to individual ownership, and changing attitudes towards housing styles imported from the U.S. and U.S. became prevalent in Kamehameha and on Maui in the late 1950s and early 1960s. It is also significant for its association with American Hawaiians and Euro Hawaiians who continue to live in Kamehameha during the plantation and post-plantation periods, maintain informal networks with Ohana on the island and Hawaii, as well as all their cultural knowledge, largely rich secret, only sharing it with other unique elements. Architecturally, it is the most unique contemporary mid-century modern style house in the landmark district. When compared to four other homes of the same style in the district, the Mary P. Bright House's massing and design are more elaborate. It is also the only contemporary mid-century modern home that has site landscape elements that date from the early 20th century, including a generous front yard with mature mango tree and wood rock walls.
Thank you. Are there any other further testimony? Is there any? Thank you very much. Members of the board, is there someone who would nominate a submission?
I had a couple of questions. You listed the period of significance as 1963 to 1967, corresponding with a year of construction and the 50-year threshold for eligibility. I was thinking this should just be the year of construction. And not, I mean, I haven't seen somebody before stretch that and say it's significant until the date, you know, the 50 years, which should be 69 rather than 67 probably now. But
okay.
I would think maybe it's just, you know, the year of construction.
Okay.
I gotta admit, I think we've been getting different reads on that. Because when I did mine several years ago, I was told ended at 50
oh,
years.
Really?
Okay. As I understand, the register doesn't like that.
Yeah.
But the state office recommended that. But
okay.
It's a hard one to read.
I just hadn't, yeah, I hadn't personally seen that before, so. I would think it's sort of understood that, you know, the whole period in which it's 50 years or older is significant. And then unless there's other, then there's other, unless there's other other events that happen during that time that add to the significance of it.
Other than the fact that she lives in it.
Yeah. Right.
What criterion is it being nominated under?
ANC.
ANC. So I mean, in terms of the period of significance, you know, you would, you know, so association with events, so it would be the period when that it sort of embodies the event. But the same token for the design, again, the period of significance ought to reflect the period for which that type of architecture is significant. So, you know, this is. One of the problems with saying it's, you know, we deal with every day, for example, in project review with things that are significant. You know, Pearl Harbor in the National Historic Landmark, it's significant because of December 7th. But in fact, that's why it's listed, and that's what the nomination said. But in point of fact, it is significant for, you know, both the immediate pre-war period and throughout the war, and some, you know, depending on the resource, in some cases, into the Cold War era. But if you look at the nomination strictly, it's significant for one day. And in my personal opinion, and obviously it's your judgment call, that's far too much.
It's always convenient if somebody moves out at some point, and then you have some demarcation or something, as opposed to an arbitrary end.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it changes whether or not it's significant. I had never seen it listed that way before. So.
Now, did anybody here do a site visit, Pat? Did you go to see
it? I did not.
Oh, I know.
I think Nancy.
Nancy did. And she.
Yeah. Is there anyone that would nominate this house?
I had just actually another question, if that's okay. I have another question for
okay.
And I'm not actually saying this is wrong, it's just some of these dates sort of struck me and I wanted to confirm that you thought this too, but you listed the date that James Bright and Mary P. Bright were born and said they were married possibly as early as 1912, and so he would have been 18 and she would have been like 12 or 13, maybe? I mean, which is definitely possible.
Yeah, you couldn't find an actual birth certificate.
Yeah.
So that was an extrapolated date.
Yeah, and then it says that during this 1930 census, they were recorded living in this place with three kids, so she would have been like 20 with three kids, which is not impossible, but I just was looking at math like, wow, she was young.
I can retest that again.
Yeah.
But again, without actually having a birth record, it was not possible.
Yeah.
The genealogical research took a lot of time because I had to actually do two families.
Well, and you obviously did a lot of research on that, which was great.
Even before we make a nomination or not, I think I want to compliment Stanley on a really thorough and excellent nomination. Documentation.
A lot of
really
information.
Yeah. Thank you, Stanley, and thank you to the local officer from Maui for doing due diligence as well.
Thank you.
I'll nominate the property for listing on the Hawaii Register of Historic Places under criteria A and C.
Thank you, Doctor.
Seconded.
Are they asking for National Register listing?
We can.
Can I ask, too, that you talked about that there was another proposed addition to the front that was listed on the drawings, but is that, so is that not going to be constructed anymore?
No. The floor plan that was shown to you today is a finished product. That addition was actually an extension off the garage going back towards the shore.
Yeah.
That following, that actually was already permitted, but it had not been built when we came in with the nomination last year. So when we deferred the item from the last hearing, the owner decided not to.
At this time, we'll survey each member if you have any comment, and then we'll take a vote. A newest member, start with that. If you have any comments about,
no,
you should let them have it.
That's a little cruel.
Thank you.
I have no comment.
I just want to say that I think it was interesting that they made the effort to keep the jalousie windows and then put new windows inside that. I hadn't seen that solution before, and so I thought that that's interesting. I think there was, on the exterior, even on the backside, even though the house form is the same, which is great, there has been a lot of modifications to the fenestration, like putting in, you know, doors where there was windows, and that does have some impact on it. And it is a little unfortunate that the interior layout has changed, really. I mean, you know, they took out the porch and then made it into one big room, and there is some adjustment, so the shape of the building is the same. You know, like the kitchen now is that whole big space, so it is not drastically different, but it is different on the interior. But I mean, we understand that often that does happen with historic houses, but
I had the same concern looking at the photos that I saw from the site visit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A kind of really substantial alteration of the interior. I don't complete, I mean, I think in a district you can become a contributing part of the district, but I do think individual nominations, we tend to take interior features more into account.
Yeah, I had the same concern. I also, that band that goes around the exterior, I know it's probably covering a plywood joint or something, but that to me is kind of detracts from the 1960s exterior appearance.
And the fact that it's painted a different color actually draws your attention to it more. Yeah.
Just, I mean, it's just one small detail. But
what is the exterior walling material now, Stanley?
It's still CMU.
Except for the gables or
was there a wood sort of horizontal band?
That's what I understand. You could ask Annalise.
Did we see the before picture?
Good. It wasn't.
So the gable itself is what?
Gable's plywood.
Yeah, plywood always. But originally.
Yeah, originally plywood.
Plywood originally too. It looks like, is there a band there?
Yeah. You can just pronounce. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The fact that it's all the same color.
Around the corner, so from left to right, you can see the band.
So the gable wasn't originally vertical. Doug was further than, right?
No, it was plywood.
1960s. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all those buildings in Hawaii kind of that period, and they were using vertical CMG.
Chair Sousa, may I?
Sure.
Last year, we looked at a house on Hanalei Bay in Kauai called the Fish House, and I spoke at the time because there had been exterior alterations as well as in fact, primarily, but and I argued at the time, similarly to Mr. Solomilla, that it is one of the few remaining houses that were used for, at the time, plantation personnel to come to get away on the beach, and all around it are these McMansions, and that is that there are times that the, you know, location, we tend to think of architecture as being, you know, the most important of the seven areas of integrity, but there are times that other things really come to the fore, and I think that this house may fit into that category in a way that, if it were in a different place, is a community of these post-war, post-strike unionization houses as they came up, might not be so important.
Gentlemen? I don't have any reservations about listing it under criteria A. The modifications would see kind of questionable in my mind, and I appreciate that there's a real attempt to maintain outer facade, especially that visible from the street, but significant changes to the interior and to the back facing, changing the doors and windows is of some concern for me for criteria C. But as far as A goes, I don't have any reservations.
Yeah, I feel largely the same. Thank you for expressing concerns.
Any other additions or suggestions?
I don't know if we can try to project what the planning or development impacts are going to be. Really, I think we have to take it as a space now.
Right, but setting, feeling, association, certainly the association is there. The setting on that lot and with the access to the ocean, the feeling of this, you know, post-war, early mid-century modern house, you still see and feel that. Unfortunately, I haven't had a site visit. I would like to have seen more about the interior written in the nomination and I appreciated all of the, I thought it was interesting the way you went into the, not only the bright ohana, but the carpenter, the contractor, the plumber, land use. I thought all of that was good. I would have liked to have read and seen more images of the interior. Given what we have looking at the exterior, I think that it is a legitimate criterion is that feeling in addition to association, and you know things, workmanship is more important in some of our nominations than it is in others. Materials is more important in some than others. Feeling, location, setting, association is more important than some.
Any other additions, please?
Yes.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good.
My name is Ross Stevenson, and I went through the documentation on the house, and I went through the last night the what I felt coming away from the federal requirements is that the issue really is nothing else to protect the exterior of the structure in order to maintain the sense of character of the neighborhood. And most of us who have lived in the islands for 50 or more years, we remember areas that have just been totally changed the character. I really would recommend passing this. I know some people disagree with me, but the thing is that we can't please everybody. But for example, the Lahaina Historic District, there's discussion about shrinking it because of the fact that there's no more sugarcane coming into the center of town that there was in the early 60s and other factors like that. So in order to keep this kind of character of that period, if the compromise has to be to change the interior, it's somewhat like an adaptive reuse, but the importance is to maintain the character of the neighborhood. So we've all seen pressure in like Kahala Avenue or worse yet, Kalani on the Oli Highway when I was a kid, had nice front broad lawns, and all of that's gone. Again, to maintain the character of the neighborhood, I would just strongly suggest that listing be put on just to encourage this kind of building to remain. Thank you.
Prior to coming here, I worked as a cultural resource planner for Maui County for 8.5 years. The Lahaina NHL was constantly under threat. The people coming to Lahaina, buying a beachfront, tearing down the old house that was on it, and building something huge and new. And I appreciate, you know, the interest in preservation of the historic interior. But if we look at some of the houses that were listed in both the Hawaii Register as well as the National Register by this body, during my tenure at Maui County, they included the Kaluakini House, which was really important because it was a Hawaiian sheriff, Lahaina. It was his family domicile. And Don Huber did another nomination on the beachfront house as well. Those represent Hawaiians living there in the 30s. What's important about this, and I think it's something that I've striven for a while now, is that Hawaiians just disappeared. You know, they have maintained the presence. And this is an indicative building of that presence continuing on to the modern period. What we fail to understand as purists and as architects looking at historic buildings oftentimes is that these houses were extremely utilitarian. That's linoleum floor, you know, on a concrete slab, exposed CMU walls, jalousie windows, no woodwork, canopy ceilings. And I doubt if we're trying to rehabilitate buildings for new lives, you know, to continue to function as dwellings in this century, I doubt that people would want to live in those environments. And I didn't get the documentation to present how utilitarian the interior of this particular building was. But that's something I think that we forget in dealing with this whole transition of and essentially going to track housing in the post-war period.
Thank you very much. Any other comment?
Well, I want to return to my point. I mean, I'm a preservationist too, and I think it's important that we realize what the ramifications are, but for purposes of listing, I think the property just has to stand on its own merits. We've had a number of people will come, we didn't save this, we get a McMansion there. So that, I mean, that's not what we can make decisions on the basis of. We have to say, is this property in itself eligible? I think when you talk about interiors, I think there is a hierarchy. There's a whole brief on the hierarchy of assessing interiors. Configuration is probably the key thing, more than surfaces. So there has been, a change to the configuration of the interior, interior walls and things like that. And then, of course, the change to the volume to the higher ceilings. I think those are my main concerns.
Okay.
I have a comment.
Please.
I agree with Ms. Griffith and Mr. Stevenson and Mr. Solomio. I think, and with all due respect to appreciation for the interior, it's not just the structure that's being up for nomination, it's the property as a whole. And I think there's as has already been very well articulated, there's an importance to the entire property and the history of the property and the setting of the property, and I believe that in its entirety, the structure with the surrounding property as a whole, I strongly support the nomination.
Thank you. Call for the question. I'm going to talk this to death.
It's been helpful, but I think it's helpful.
You have been.
I think it's helpful to hear these opinions.
No, I didn't mean negative wide. I meant mm-hmm. it's okay. It's been nominated and it's been seconded for category A and C. At this time, I'd like to call for the vote. All those in favor of listing it. Now, I wasn't clear about, is it national or local as well?
I'm going to register with historic places initially.
We haven't made a motion for the national.
Just for the, this is just the local. For the local listing, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those against?
You might want to have a hand count. Yeah,
we'll start. This is the negative vote, right? All those against it? All those in favor? Listing for the local A and C. Did you want to try for the national?
May I suggest we make a motion for that now? And in the future, even if somebody's just looking for state, according to what Dr. Downer told us in the past, if in our motion we say that we want to nominate to state register, with the possibility in the future of sending it to national, people won't have to come back and start all over again. It's just a suggestion.
Is that your nomination then?
We just need to have a motion and a second.
We just had a motion. Second.
I move that it be, we recommend that it's listing on the national register.
Second.
Under criterion A and C.
A and C. All those in favor of listing it for the national, as prefaced by the remarks, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Somebody
else in the score. Okay. A decisive
I
person.
I saw that it was 2.5 against 2.
Thank you all. Thank you very much. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the Haleiwa Jodo Mission.
I just saved money on the air conditioning today.
You have to speak.
And please, do you all do site visits?
I do. Oh,
I do.
Oh, eat before November.
Alan, is the air conditioning on or off?
That in Kauai.
We're all for saving state taxpayer dollars.
And some properties are in properties called that. A map is not a landscape. Anyway, I wondered if y'all were doing that. Thanks.
Yeah, no,
Okay, let's continue again. Lorraine, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me. We're going to be introducing the Haleiwa Jojo Mission today. And I wanted to introduce two members who are here with us, Sherry Yamauchi and Melanie Matsui. So they're here to support the nomination. We are wanting to list the Haleiwa Jojo Mission under Criterion A for religion and ethnic heritage. The type of building is temple, the style is Japanese plantation, and the year constructed and the year period of significance would be 1913 through 1975. History of the Haleiwa Jojo is that on September 30th, 1913, the trustees of the mission decided to rent a one-acre parcel near the Haleiwa train stop, which had a hotel building located on it. Shortly after beginning the lease, at the end of 1913, the temple purchased the hotel. And here's the Sanborn map of 1927, showing the Japanese church and addition to that, which was the minister's residence. Here in 1957, the temple was slightly moved. I don't know if you can tell, but it's in that location, and then in 1957, it moves over to the other side, and the classroom building is there, as well as the hall. But as far as significance, the Haleiwa Jojo Mission property meets the historic criterion A for local significance. Haleiwa Jojo Mission has contributed to the broad patterns of development in the history of Hawaii and to the story of Japanese immigration. Haleiwa Jojo has been in its present location and active in the Wailua area as the first Japanese Jojo Mission on Oahu since it was established in 1913. And the site is significant for its association with the history of Japanese Buddhist community in Hawaii. The architectural description is that it's a two-story wood frame plantation-style temple building of the late 19th and early 20th century American movement. It has a 3-12 roof pitch with a rectangular floor plan. And it's embellished with a gentle gable roof form above the entry porch on the second floor. And the interior of the temple is an open plan layout, originally lined with wooden pews and an elevated altar. The altar area, called the Naijin in Japanese, is a large elevated altar area located towards the rear of the space. Its altar is embellished with round wood perimeter columns and a decorative frieze called the Bama, and gridded with a decorative ceiling above the Naiji. The temple property is located in Wailua, and it's just past and adjacent to the Haleiwa Ali'i Beach Park. Additional non-contributing buildings on the property include the 1959 school building and the 1975 temple building. The original temple has integrity of design, materials, and workmanship of the mid-1930s and traditional Japanese plantation style and some modern style elements. The property is also in good condition. Character defining features of the building is its 3-12 shallow pitch roof pitch. embellished with the gentle gable roof form above the entry porch, called a angala, and rectangular open plan, which was actually had originally tatami and then later the wooden pews. It has an elevated altar area that's still intact, the round perimeter columns with the kumimono bracketing also intact, decorative ceiling above the nanjing intact, and wooden double hung windows also intact. And here are some photos of the building. There are some non-contributing elements, additions to the building that have been made over the years, which is why we did not list it under criterion C for architecture. Here's the interior, the altar area that we're looking at in the left-hand corner, upper corner. And right below it is the kumimono bracketing and a view of the altar area from an oblique perspective. The integrity, we believe it has quite a bit of integrity on the upper floor of the original temple building. The windows, the location of the entry door, original altar area, and backroom areas are all intact. There have been some additions to the building over the years that are incompatible. But as far as integrity, we have high integrity of location. It is not changed. The setting, especially located right up on the ocean, is also intact and not changed. The design of it, it has been modified slightly and because of the alterations, especially on the lower floor and on the side additions. Materials, I believe, are the original on the second floor. There's good workmanship. Some of the additions that were hastily added to due to hurricane damage in the 1959 hurricane. There's a good feeling, the park and the surrounding area has slightly modified, but in the overall feel, the setting and the feeling is intact. Association is, of course, excellent, still associated with the Haleiwa Jodo mission. And that's my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Lorraine.
Lorraine, can we see the map again? I was confused about what was moved. It looked like it was on the same site, but
it is. It appears to be that
looked like other parts were moved.
It's hard to tell, truthfully, but it appears as though the building, it was originally a hotel building, mm-hmm. So we kind of know the dimensions of it. It looks like it was moved from the original central location to this edge of the site.
But prior to 27?
We don't know where it was prior to 27. There was no sandboard map.
But there wasn't any change from 27 to 57, right?
It looks as though, so you see that corner building here. So if you go to the 27 room, okay, so this Japanese church building with the front porch, if you go to the...
Oh, okay, so that was moved, the other one was demolished?
Yes, because one of them was the minister's residence.
So that was the building to the right in the last one?
Right.
Go back again.
It could be that they just enlarged that front porch. The corner building might be actually the same.
That's my thought.
Yeah, that they just enlarged the porch, yeah.
And that was part of the hotel as well?
The hotel building, we have, I think, a picture. No one ever found a picture of the hotel building. We assume that center one was the hotel building, but that also was very difficult to verify because there weren't I think that they
jumped to 57 again. So.
The records are slightly scattered because of most of the records are just demolished during the war and then, of course, with the flood in 1950.
In your nomination on section 7, page 7, it talks about the integrity of the building, and it says, the integrity of the upper floor of the original temple is largely intact. The windows, location, entry door, and original altar are all intact. There have been some additions to the building over the years that are incompatible. And that's all the description that there is of the changes. And
no, there's a couple of paragraphs below that, right?
The first contributing structure on the site, the school building rebuilt, so it talks about the site and the buildings. But there isn't any description, like, specifically of this building and of what was original and what was changed, which I think would be helpful to documenting, you know, what you think actually was original and what was added. Like, if I look at the historic picture, you have a historic picture in here of the structure. And then there's another picture of the current day, and it looks like they enclosed the front porch, right, which does look like it happened a long time ago, but it's hard to know. I mean, that probably in itself is also historic, depending on when that happened. So it actually would be good to know whether, if you could tell sort of when that happened and whether that now is
really
part
difficult.
Of
it. I mean, we could talk about the fact that it was enclosed, but we couldn't really speak to when that happened.
You could give a bracketed idea, right? Approximately, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, if, and if you look, because if you look at these drawings, and you were just talking about the previous one, if you go to the 27 map, it almost looks like the building on the right was it, and it shows how that little porch comes in on the front, but then, yeah, maybe they expanded it. So even, like, the Sanborn maps might give you a clue as
right,
to when they...
Right, somewhere between 1927.
Right, right. And then there's the... Now there's, well, actually, the whole time, there's that section off the left. Like, if you look at the front, there's a left side that sticks out, and there's another stair. Like, just looking at that when you walked up, I totally thought that that was a more recent addition. But when you look at the old picture, you can see that was already there in this 1950 picture. Mm-hmm. And so I think it just would be helpful to add a little bit more text to this about what was there, you know, in the period of significance and what you think has been added, instead of just saying,
yeah,
oh, there's been some alterations and just leaving it at that. Just, I think it would be good for the record of this, for somebody who's just picking this up and reading about it, wanting to know, well, which part of this is old and new.
I agree with Katie. Even if you're speculating or giving some measured kind of informed guesses, same with those additions, the shed roof additions. I mean,
yeah.
I think by looking at the material and the character of the design, sometimes 60s, 70s, possibly 80s,
yeah.
I would guess, from the materials that were used there. But you basically say there are a bunch of additions.
And actually, now that I'm looking at this picture, you know, I'm trying to piece together from this picture, it says circa 1950, and then the current, you know, the you know, new photo, the porch wasn't enclosed yet in 1950. You know, so it happened after that, but it could have happened soon after that. But still, I think it would be good to put into text, and rather than having somebody try to, you know, piece it together by going back and forth between the photos and saying, well, you're saying some of this is not original or even is modern. Well, which part is that?
To
record it.
I think if you're going to have the time period of significance, you're going to want to bracket that somehow, like not end at 1975, because then you go on to explain that these additions of the 60s are not significant, but you made the case that the period of significance is through 75, which, again, we probably couldn't make it through 75 right. because that's into the...
That's less than 50
less
years.
Less than 50 years, mm-hmm. but let's say you want to, at some point, restore it, you would want to be able to open that up to be able to restore it to a period within that time period, right? That's what the standard would expect. So if you say the period of significance is 1959 or something,
right.
that it ends there, then all those extra additions could logically not be significant. And if you're claiming that those sheds and all the things that you discount are within the period of significance, then you're making a case for their significance.
Okay. Isn't it the... As a boy, I remember us going to that beach there, and I remember that being there. Does its presence have a historical significance? Like, you know, we know it's all there. As local people, we used to always go there. It was always there. Is that a historical point of view? Or, in other words, it was there a long, long time ago, and a lot of us knew about it, and I'm just kind of curious if that's an angle you're using. No, you're not.
I think when in the statement that it's really been a part of the Wildwood District since 1913. So I didn't mention like the bone dance and the Toto Nagashi mm-hmm. and the other community events that happened there, but we could, I mean.
A landmark, you could say, on the beach.
Yeah, it is definitely a landmark.
Okay. So when was the porch filled in, Bill?
Moving along.
I also have a comment on the period of significance. I agree with Bill. I think if you're going to go all the way up to 75, especially under the criteria you're under, I mean, I'm trying to read through the application and identify the different events, and I come up with the same year too of 59. I mean, I think that makes a lot more sense, a 1913 to a 1959, when it puts you within the 50 years. And I mean, I concur with what Bill is saying. So is there a reason you went past the 59?
Sorry, can I just, I think that the 75, that's when the new temple, it transitioned. They moved, that stopped serving as the main temple in 75, and they moved it to the new temple. So I think that's why we put it as the period of significance, because it's under the A.
But you're not saying the new temple is significant because of the 50 years. So to me, that strikes me as a contradiction.
But you're saying that was a watermark because it was no longer used at that point. Yeah.
Right. I think that's when it used itself as the
So from, maybe from a historical point of view, that's interesting. But from the architectural bit, as Trish is saying, it doesn't fit very well. Yeah. I know when I did that Strode House one, he didn't die till 72. But I was told by the state office that I needed to cut it up at 68.
Oh. Because of the 50 years.
I guess we're nominating it under criteria A and not C.
But still, you wouldn't, I don't think you can really bring it up to 70s.
No, I agree with that.
Okay, so we'll stop at 59.
And also, if you have an event like a tsunami and things were hurriedly repaired after that, I mean, that in itself is a significant event and explains why stuff was constructed that way, and so that's part of the history of the,
you
know, the site.
If you want to make it part of that history,
right. Well, and it's mentioned, right. So yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, to say, you know, don't look at this; it doesn't. This isn't important, you know, because it wasn't done well. But you know, that was an important event that happened to that building and to those people.
You're thinking she should make a case for those additions and
well, I would just say at least
period of significance up to 69 or something.
Well, when the tsunami was before.
The 59 was the tsunami.
Yeah.
But those additions were made after the tsunami.
To repair.
Probably in response.
Right. But it's worth, I think, describing them as more, you know, if you're in to add more into the description of the alterations, you know, too. That's another reason to add a little bit more information.
See what I mean? If you did that, you'd want to bring the period of significance more toward the present.
But only if you think that the tsunami is a significant enough event that it becomes part of the reason why the building is significant. Even if it isn't, I think it's important to at least describe those things and say why they were there. Like what part of it got changed because of the tsunami.
But you're not arguing that those things would be in themselves significant.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I think that we did, let me grab this.
Wait, page 8? I mean, you do discuss it a bit, and it says it was completed in 59. I mean, that was kind of how I came up with the 59 year. But it's not my application.
Okay, would someone like to nominate? Mr. Chair,
are there other people who want to put on the testimony?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Thank you very much. Any other testimony?
No, I did submit a letter. I did not receive a confirmation that you got it, but I did submit it by email.
We must have got it.
I trust that you did.
Yes,
thank
we
you
have
very
it.
Much.
Thank you.
Oh, it's
we got it electronically
today.
As well.
Oh, it's today.
Mm-hmm. In today's traffic.
Okay, would someone like to nominate this category?
Is it for the state or the federal suit?
Lorraine.
State.
Just state.
State.
State. I move that the property be listed on the Hawaii Register of Historic Places under criteria. Criterion A?
Yeah.
Yeah. Criterion A. But with the. Can I amend my own motion?
But yeah, that would be. Make it, Bill.
Okay, well, can I, as I make my motion, can I incorporate a few things?
Sure.
But with the date of significance ending at 1959.
I'll second that.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Now we'll have discussion.
I actually would like to suggest that we also add to that nomination that they also include some more description about the what's been added and when they think that might happen and whether those additions are part of the period of significance or not.
Do you want to amend the motion?
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest.
Is that a friendly amendment?
Okay.
It's okay with me.
Second.
Second. Okay, now, is this further discussion about the matter? Call for the vote. All those in favor, putting it in the category A, state of Hawaii, say aye. Aye.
This is for the amendment, to vote on the amendment?
This is on everything.
On everything?
It's on everything.
Okay. All those opposed? Thank you, everyone. The next category we have is Dr. Frederick C.
and you for coming.
Susan Newcomb, resident in Vancouver Drive.
Frederick C. and Susan Newcomb residents. Some of you saw it yesterday, some of you did not. I'll be. The nomination is recommending it be placed on the Hawaii Register. If you want to do the national, go ahead, but I think we are only interested in Hawaii. But at the local level, for Criterion C for its architecture, as a good example of a bungalow built in Hawaii during the 1960s. This is
built in the 1920s.
Excuse me.
Thank you. The prior summit century now.
Yes. 1923, it was built. As I mentioned yesterday, it was built for Alf and Maddie Lauritsen. Mr. Lauritsen worked with Brewers and Cook. They only lived in the house for 1 year. I think they just sort of built it and flipped it. Then they moved over to Honeywell Street. They stayed in Hawaii until World War II. They sold it to the Newcombs in February 1924, and this is a photo I found in the newspaper. I'm sorry, I didn't include it in the nomination because I got it off newspapers.com, and was it, what do you call it, Acrobat reader thing. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't a JPEG, so I couldn't get it into the nomination, so I got to get a new computer, I guess. But
you can always take a screenshot, you know. Right, yeah.
Oh, with the camera.
Uh-huh. No, with the clicks with your buttons, just click screenshot.
Well, if you do it as a clip, you can download it as a JPEG.
Huh?
From newspapers.com,
yeah.
You can.
Oh, yeah. Okay, somebody will have to teach me that.
I'll show you how to do it.
Thank you. That's actually appreciated. I've learned a lot today. As you see in 1923, as today, Michigan man buys Manoa home for $15,000. I think it'll probably make front page news today. And so the Newcombs purchased the house then. Mr. Newcomb was a professor of botany at the University of Michigan and was quite well known. He came out here for his health. It didn't work. And his wife died, and then he died 3 months later in 1928. Mm-hmm. And then the house went to Emery and Webb. Not Emery and Webb, to Marshall Webb, of Emery and Webb, an architectural firm in town. And then 3 years later, Mr. Webb died, but his widow continued to live in the house up to World War II. The one thing I pointed out yesterday, the bracketing that was originally on the house has been replaced with a newer bracketing, which I suspect Marshall Webb did, because it's definitely pre-war bracketing. And so I'm suspecting that when he bought the house, he made that modification. Other than that, the house remains totally intact. You have the same front and eye with this very distinctive archway, the Wyatt windows, and then you saw yesterday, and I'll show you other pictures later. But so the house is very much intact from the street, and there it is now. Yeah. And so it's a very good example of bungalow style. I pointed out yesterday that they had to reconstruct the steps, but they reconstructed them in the exact same way they were because they were pulling away from the wall and it was crumbling. And so they kept the same stone and everything. Clabbered wall, which is typical. The front lanai, the 10-foot lanai, still has its original ceiling, although the lights are not original. You've got your square paneled columns, which are typical of the bungalow style as well. Originally, there was two other windows here, which was replaced with jalousies at some point early on.
And you could see them in the old picture. It looked like a multi-paned fixed window, perhaps.
Yes. Okay, next. The front door remains intact with the side lights, very much in a craftsman-y style. The door knob and hardware are still original as well. Then the ceiling is intact, Kanek ceiling, which I got thinking later, they must have put the Kanek in later because Kanek isn't invented until like 28 or 29. And so then I, taking your advice, I've already eliminated K-neck walls from the nomination form. And you can see the open floor plan, which is also typical of bungalow style, is very much retained. The oak floors remain intact also. And then, essentially, it's a small two-bedroom house with a central hallway. Still has all its original doors and the original linen. So I think it's a very good example of the bungalow style in Hawaii. Like I said, bungalows were very popular in the 19th, well, from the teens onward. Usually in the teens, they had hip roofs, and in the 20s, you went over to gable roofs. And this is one of only six, there's right now six bungalows listed from the 1920s on the register. So I think this is another good example.
That would be a surprise to me.
So. Oh, also, I forgot to mention yesterday, in the short years that Dr. Newcomb was here, he was very active in the local scientific community, and he started the Hawaii Botanical Society, and he also started the Hawaii Academy of Science. And both of those organizations are still in existence today.
Are you using, is it criterion A as well, or just criterion C?
I was doing C. I guess I probably, it's probably safe to use A as well for botany, but yes, I didn't.
But if you want to, that's the case you're making.
If there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Yes, ma'am.
I said two things. One is, I think it would be great if you could add that newspaper photo to the nomination, because it is.
Okay, once somebody shows me how to do it.
Yeah, that's easy.
Come by my office, I'll be
glad. Thank you.
I can show you too.
Oh.
Just read newspapers.com.
Okay, good.
And the other is, when we were leaving, the basement is like, there's a little bit of it that has a, you know, above ground, so it has the windows. We kind of looked down through it, and it looked like there was still some really original material down there as well. There's an old sink and an old shower.
Yeah, I did check after you left.
Okay.
I was raised, and the one door that we looked through, that section has the laundry room and stuff, but there is a door in the back at the far end that leads into that section, although that board door is all boarded up already, so they've abandoned it. But it looks like there was a maid's quarters there at one point. The sink is still there, but the guy told me that there's no more bathroom, toilet, no matter, it's all gone already.
Yeah.
So, but it was at one point, I think, a maid's quarters.
Yeah, but it might be worth sticking in a couple of pictures of that too, just because it looked like that was still original or his
okay, I'll have to try and get access, but it's boarded up. I can't get in where you saw the sink through the window. I can't get there.
It's unfortunate, because in that space there's not only the sink, but there's looks like an original interior door in there that was partially open,
and an old shower too, maybe like the metal lined one maybe.
Okay,
so there's some features back there. It may not be accessible anymore, but those really look like dated original features.
Because the guy took me in and showed me, and the door's all boarded, you know, we got stuff boarding it up.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get that.
Surprised they don't want to utilize that for at least storage or something.
Yeah, oh, and I also, some people asked whether it's being used as transient accommodations, and the guy confirmed what I thought, because I've gone by. And no, just the owners, they live in the mainland, but they come over off and on, and they don't want the place trashed by transients.
I remember when Dr. Ikeda was on the board and he was a sociologist, he used to always emphasize the historical significance of maids' quarters. And so the thought would be, if you're going to make it refer to criterion A, you got Newcomb, a little bit about Newcomb and his history, but you also have this history that's somewhat different in Hawaii, that you might not have, say, in California, at a middle-class level, expected to have a maid's quarters in the basement. And so I'm going to just talk about one line. It would be interesting.
Okay.
That's sort of different, because this, you know, as you know, bungalow housing is thought to be very middle-class, but Hawaii had this kind of quasi-colonial condition that had a people of color working in a domestic capacity that wasn't so common maybe in the mainland. Just a thought.
Yeah, that's easy to add a sentence or so on that.
I've just got a quick question on architectural nomenclature, and that we've never really had a good set of standards on this. I would have called the siding beveled shiplap, not clapboard.
Oh, really? Okay. I always just went skinny.
But each one is two.
Oh, it is.
And then it's a shiplap siding, so it's applied flush.
Oh, it is a shiplap.
Mm-hmm. All those sidings like that you see all over Hawaii are a shiplap. They've got a, you know, they're rabbeted in two ways, and then they fit with each other. But it is kind of, they sold it elsewhere. I've seen it in California and stuff too. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of came out of the sort of, what, quote, novelty board siding tradition.
You looked at it closely?
Mm-hmm.
That's okay, I didn't.
Okay. So there's nothing literally overlapping in the same way as a clapboard. But
okay.
And as we've talked about this before, technically a clapboard is, that's like a term used a lot in New England. And the original clapboards were like 3 feet long, and then they were overlapping, right?
Right.
So, but I think it's probably legitimate to extend that to be any overlapping beveled siding like that. But this is a shiplap. This is a shiplap manufactured siding of some sort. Okay. But I think a lot of our places have that.
Okay, I'll watch closer and I'll amend this one.
And one other tedious little point is that when I think they made a mistake by making the bigger brackets. But technically, those brackets at that scale, like that, coming as sort of faults, like purlins in a way, are technically called outlooks.
No, I've seen figure four brackets quite often.
Okay, maybe a different language here, but okay. If you look at the standard catalogs of the period, they referred to outlooks. I don't know why.
I don't either. I've always found it as figure four.
Are there any other testimonies?
Just one thing we haven't really talked about is the addition of the deck. You know, that might be good to include that in the photographic documentation, I think. You know, something you talk about, but it'd be nice to have a photo, I think, of that just to show.
I can put that in.
I just suggestion.
Significant features rather than, I don't photograph remodeled kitchens. But so usually I document what is historic rather than what's not historic in the nomination.
Okay.
Thank you. Is there anyone I would like to nominate this applicant?
I moved that we nominate the Frederick and Susan Newcomb residents to the state register with the ability in the future to take it to national. And after the inclusion of a narrative about the servants' quarters, the inclusion of the newspaper image, picture of the lower level if possible, and a photo of the new deck.
Second.
Thank you. Discussion? Call for the question. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Yeah. 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 Yeah
late summer.
Good afternoon, or almost afternoon. I'm Ross Davidson again with the Historic Watertown Town Project. I know most of you, but I am at a little bit of a disadvantage today because this was put together by Laura Ruby, and she ended up in the hospital.
Oh dear.
She got out. So when she's in her 70s, you know, I got to tell her to take it easy, and so she asked me to go ahead and... Well, I'm almost there too, so. Because she's ahead of me and I'm trying to be a gentleman, I say, take it easy, Laura. So anyway, if you go ahead and... what she had prepared was actually an update on what's happened in Honeycomb. As you know, we've been going ahead and showing a bunch of different buildings. We've got a multi-task project. We've been spending money repairing buildings. We've been helping people get used to dealing with preservation law. We've been putting buildings on nominations. And we've also been putting up historic markers. One of the things we also did is we had somebody at the State Board of Transportation Highways Division who let us put up these kinds of signs that you see on the mainland that were on information interest signs. We're just about the only ones in the state right now have done this, and I really wish to see this done in, say, Kona or something like this along the Alka Highway. Next please. These are the kind of historic markers we've been putting up on the buildings that have been listed on the National Register. We decided that we didn't want to have just the sign that says Podmore Building 1926. We wanted to have something that told the story, made an interesting thing about the individual building. And we've got about 10 of these up now in town. So next time the board goes over to the Big Island, you'll be able to see a bunch of these. Next one. And this is the kind of work we've been also doing. We've been painting, having windows repaired. We just spent $10,000 on painting the Mackay side of the biggest building in town, which is about 60 feet up on its point because of the slope of the land. So we had to go out and hire a cherry lift to get up there to replace the plumbing and paint it, etc. Next, please. And we've, it's another place where we've done some work painting this building. This is actually two buildings that have a common facade. It's really kind of unusual. If you go back to the rear side, you'll get the story. But if you go in the front, it's ambiguous. Anyway, the K and the 1930, that's the date of the store that's in that section of the building. It's not the ancient. Next, please. 1937, Hasegawa. This building is actually three different parts, plus the buildings in the back. And as you can see from the windows, it gives you an idea that it is a different period. You can see the kinds of windows, again, that we had to display from that time. This is on the National Register of Historic Places, too. Next, please. This is the most recent building that went on the Historic National Register. We're very happy with this because this building was the most, to quote a local term, had building in town. The paint was peeling off in rivets. The front futon roof was sagging. And we were just afraid somebody was going to play arsonist on it. But it's a dual complex. It has housing in the back. Right now, the housing in the back is very, very active. They completely refurbished this place. They had, we pulled up some of the material on the floor and had a bunch of 1930s newspapers. So the building was quite an interesting thing in itself. Next, please. And this is the object of our discussion today. You may be familiar with like the Hopahomaji in Honolulu, which the bishop at the time in the 20s and early 30s wanted to show Buddhism as a international religion, not just the Japanese religion. Chopin wanted to hear taken elements of other sections, for example, the Islamic flavor in part of the detail here. The building has been changed some. There are louvers in the front because it turned out you had solid or pull-up windows in the front. Both of those two corner rooms just became hot boxes. So it was a practical thing, but they can be reversed. Next, please. Okay, to give you an idea, most of you have been to Onaka. It's on the Hamakua coast. Next, please. And this nomination actually has two parts. One is the Japanese cemetery, which is a little waipio or to the left or west of the town, and then the Honka Hongwanshi Buddhist mission itself. The reason for this is that in the time period that the mission was first started in the teens, plantations would give land for use to the different religious sects, the Catholics and all these other groups. But the Buddhist mission lot was very small. The Catholics have a large second cemetery, Malka, their complex, where that cross is, just to the left of the lower red arrow. But the Japanese Hongwanshi mission did not have enough space. So the plantation gave them basically wasteland on the hillside, and they built their cemetery there. Next, please. And here again, you can get an idea of the Ahu Pua'a. The two arrows again are on the right, the mission, and on the left, the cemetery. Next, please. This is a 1914 map written by a Nihonjin giving an explanation of Japanese social and activities. This is a part of a series that was done all over the territory at the time. Lorraine Minutuishi translated this for us. The square on the left is where the Hongwanji is. And what's funny about it, if you look at some of the old maps, it says Japanese church. And it sometimes uses Japanese Christian church, but it's not. I've got to remember, Sandor was from the mainland. So. And you're looking north. The road going down there is to the Hainan. Next. And we did an inventory when we first started this project out of the different buildings here. The ones that are green are historic buildings. And this is one reason why we concentrated on Honoka as a demonstration project, because this is a walkable town. You can see how close most of these buildings are together. kind of tannish or mustard color with a red arrow, that's the Hongwanshi mission. Next, please. And here's a tax map. These town lots get redeveloped and replatted over and over again, so you get these kind of really kapakaki kind of land frames that people work with, and I'll explain in a minute, they did a really nice job with this. Next, please. Okay, this is the complex. You're going to see several different photographs, but you have here, this is one building. And you have the parsonage, I guess to use a Christian term, but where the priest lives is over here. This is the temple. This is the social hall. The columbarium is here. And this is where they teach judo. And you can see with the kind of, as I said, kapakahi boundary lines, the property. They put the longest and biggest building in where they could. And this is a sloping lot, as you'll see, too. So it's quite interesting, but the architecture, again, really reflects the period. Next, please. And this is a map of the cemetery. And this is typical Hawaii. You've got two gullies over here. And you had a kuleana right here, initially in the cemetery. And the access is a long walkway up here, but it's all now a cemetery. Because the plantation would absorb all the small little bits and pieces of land. And they're looking Makai here, north. And you have the church, you have the social hall, the Jodo, and you have the columbarium. Each of these has got a kind of interesting thing on its own. Next, please. This is the where the priest lives again, and this is the main entrance to the temple. Next, please. And this is the garage. It's the most recent building on the facility behind the priest's home. And this is the temple itself. Next, please. And one thing that I found in several of the Buddhist churches across the islands, you have this special kind of ornate wooded glasswork around the building to let light in. And one thing I think is really interesting about this building is look at how these windows are designed. They're like Iolani Palace, where you can open them up and you can walk in the window and really bring air in to the center of the complex. And if you've got 250 people in there, this is a real, real boon. And it's low-tech, proven technology. And it's just it's really kind of fun. And again, you have the original doors. Next, please. And again, you have on the sides, you can pull these windows up and bring in ventilation on both sides of the building. So you do need to do some work. You can see over time that some of the glass is cracked, but nothing is out of place. It could be copied if necessary. Next, please. Inside the temple, you notice how they built a lot of Western-style church facilities here. They have pews and all, but they've maintained the main section of the temple. The bell is actually outside over there. And again, you can open up these windows to let in air. Next, please. Now, this is the social hall. Classroom is down below. They can have the temple activities for all members of the community, not just Buddhists. I've been to several different services here for lots of different social functions that weren't necessarily having to do with Buddhism. And you have, of course, the symbol of the Buddhist church. And this is the columbarium, which we'll talk about in a minute. Notice the Toton roofs. We just spent $10,000 putting on a new Toton roof on the city. Next. And this is inside the social hall. Again, you have a platform for activities. You'll see some that have taken place here in a minute. And you have the crest again and a Japanese-style backdrop. Next, please. This is the columbarium. A lot of Japanese, they don't bury people as much as they use a columbarium. What's so fascinating about how resourceful these people are here, look at this. What does that remind you of?
Post office.
Safe deposit box.
Post office.
Well, actually, they look really close to your high school locker. You got a little key thing, you got a little air vent, and all that other stuff. And I've never seen this before, but it's immaculately maintained, and it's very simple, and it works.
So they got it from a school supply store, you think?
They probably did. The Ikeuchi Hardware is just down the street. Okay, this building has been moved slightly within the property, Shibakai, just to make more parking space. But this is where they teach judo and other types of activities. And it has a lower area over here. You can see the slope goes down. Next, please. And this is the interior with the matting, so that you're not going to break your shoulder when you're in practice. You have, again, the religious potential use space here in the center. And you have the old-style plantation double-hung windows. So it's very well-maintained. Again, it does need a new roof. We're going to look at that. Next, please. Now, this is the Japanese cemetery, which is on plantation wasteland. It's on Waipio, or the west side of town. This is the main highway. They straightened out and remodeled the highway to Waipio in about 1962, and they put up this wall to give it a little privacy. What you have in this cemetery is they built a long series of walkways up this hill. the Kuleana was up on the top. And this structure here, you go to a lot of Japanese-influenced cemeteries in the islands, you can have a central plinth or a stone marker for the group. You see this, for example, in the Japanese cemetery in Uiliuli at Oahu. Next, please. And this is that same monument. It was built by a man named Kurlitsu and other members of the congregation just in the first part of 1941, just a few months before the attack. And one thing that you can see here is what's very common, or was common, in a lot of Japanese temples prior to World War II was basically the original swastika. Hitler reversed it. But that was a symbol of peace, et cetera, to thousands of millions of Buddhists around the world, especially in Japan. And in this particular monument, if you can read that, it says basically in memory of the first pioneers. This is what you usually get on these things, because these first pioneers didn't have money enough to even afford stones. A lot of them would just put up a wood post or board, and then when that deteriorated, there was no marker left. And about a month ago, we went into here with members of the church to restore and also find out what's in it. And there are a whole bunch of human bones we found inside this box. It's more than one person. And we want to hire someone who could maybe do a little bit of study on it if we can find any further information on it. But we only have some records of the cemetery, and we're doing an inventory of the cemetery now, too. Next, please. And this is like the second generation, or actually third generation stones that you get in the sense that, well, markers. The first one is wood. The second one is stone from the area. And like, and the third one will be a little bit more elaborate, which would be marble or something along that line of that tradition. But this is actually first generation stone, but as you can see, we have generations of markers, is what I mean to say. Next. This is the original temple from 1912. And you can see how heavily plantation influences this, double hung windows, you got the vent on the front, the stairway up, it's off the ground, we've got a web skirt here. And what happens is you have the plantation growing in the teens, and so they could put up these kinds of buildings on donated land from the plantation. But what will end up happening is by the 50s, the number of people living in a community starts to decline. Next, please. Now, this is a picture. This is the Methodist church that we have another nomination on that eventually went over here. This is the temple. And this is right after the war. They're using Quonset huts. There will be another Quonset hut put up over here for the church, because what's going to do is take this down and start building the present building from 1952. This is looking east. Next, please. And this is a memorial service. This is the original temple. This is the Quonset hut that they're going to reuse once this is torn down. And you can see here how the Japanese tradition of family and all of flower arrangements and all is very strong at that time. Next, please. And we talked about the social hall. This is the kind of things that go on in the social hall. You may remember the backdrop. They're playing ukuleles here. They do taiko drums. And they do theater. This is a woman dressed as a man. Usually in a lot of Japanese plays, men play women, not vice versa. So again, this is a social hall, not just for Buddhists, but also for the whole community. Next, please. Okay, this is how, again, the Buddhist church, the Japanese community is very strong. Again, Honoka. This is a memorial to Katsu Goto, who was murdered in 1889 near this site. He had been someone who was educated in English and was familiar with Western practices, and the Japanese laborers who didn't speak any English would go to him for advice. And he ended up becoming a lightning rod with reactionist factors within the plantation community. Then this, one of the things that the temple was very involved with, I don't know if you've heard about it, but several portions of the state have a peace festival every year. And so what it is, it's one of the places they have a parade every year, centered on the church in Honokaw, is the peace parade. And to wrap it up, this is the Reverend Subi, who built the new church, the new temple that's there now in 52. He's the longest-serving person at the temple. And then this is the architect again. In the early years, again, Japanese Americans did not always have to specialize education like architecture. But he was one of the earliest ones, started off as a draftsman, and this is their monument, this complex. So that's basically Laura's presentation for you. And if you have questions, I'll certainly try to answer them.
Thank you. Any questions or any further testimony?
I have a question.
Sure.
The application notes that the social hall and the dojo are both less than 50 years old, and in the past when we've talked about significance, when a property or structure doesn't meet that 50-year criterion, that there's talk about significance. The Rockefeller, the Mauna Kea Beach Resort was significant and added before it was actually 50 years. And I'm wondering what your decision was to bring the entire nomination now rather than waiting for a year and a half or so, or putting on the temple and then in a couple of years, enlarging the property boundaries to include the other two structures that are 1970s era.
Well, the dojo is actually was moved on the property. That was the issue 150 years ago, but it's very close. The social hall, the plans were brought up within the period. The construction period we have in Hawaii, you know, is almost anything is 2 years to put up most things, and it was so close to the edge. And it is a functioning unit of the temple that we felt that we would go ahead and see if you folks would accept it. The other reason, of course, is a little selfish, because we have limited resources, and we have a whole bunch of other buildings that we want to nominate. So having to go back and do part of it again, we thought, well, we're so close, let's just see what the board would say.
That was actually what part of what I wondered, because we did visit Ms. Hongonji when we had our field trip. And I know that y'all have a lot more, and so I was wondering, you know, now why did they bring this now rather than one of the other properties that you've been working so hard on? This is your and Laura's typical fabulous research job, and they're always interesting to read. But that really stopped me as I was reading on that.
Well, the board has done it both ways over the years. Come back or just go ahead and by the time it goes to the feds or something like that. In fact, I'm very happy that the board, to tell the board, I don't know if you've been told by the staff, but we have three nominations that have been forwarded out to the feds. So we're really ecstatic about that. But again, we understand if the board wants to postpone it or not. There is some play in the past that things have not been 50 years, but it's not like it's 25 years ago or something like that. It's more like a year. And we had that thing, when do you call the building? You call it when they use the OO stick and push the first dirt, or do you do it when they had the dedication ceremony, which sometimes is months after they completed or used the building. It's just not enough records.
But right now you're listing those as non-contributing because they're not 50 years old.
Sorry?
You're listing the other buildings as non-contributing?
Oh, no, the only non-contributing building is the carport, because okay. That's way later.
You're nominated as buildings, or is it as a district?
Well, we talked to the Park Service, and he said to just go ahead and do it as one nomination. Our real issue was the cemetery isn't contiguous
right.
to the Hongguanxi.
That's what I was kind of getting at, because one of the things that my preservation knowledge serves me right is in a historic district, one of the types of buildings that can be listed outside the period of significance is a building that's almost within the period of significance in a district, along with a building of exceptional importance and things like that. But districts do allow for buildings just slightly outside. Mm-hmm. Many farm complexes are nominated as districts as opposed to individual properties. Alan, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think my principal thought is if a building is significant when it's 50, it's probably significant when it's 49
yeah,
or 49.
I think the language actually says even as an individual building, something on the cusp is acceptable.
Not for the state register.
Not for the state register. Okay. That's right. You're right. The state
that's
takes a very strong...
For the state register, it's an absolute.
Yeah, you're right. The national register allows for this. Thank you, Katie.
Are there any further discussion?
I have two quick questions.
Sure.
So the judo place, was that originally a Japanese language school?
There was a Japanese language school on the Bunkyo side, but that was taken down.
Okay.
Because the judo was moved, though, to allow for more parking.
So what was the judo building used for originally?
Judo.
From the get-go?
Yeah, from my understanding. The several of the temples along the Hamakua coast, for example, the Shindon and the Kuilo, have had separate judo dojos forever.
Mm.
And so I think that they actually had competition between the different temples at times, just like the baseball.
You do use the term triple hung for your windows, right? The ones that go all the way up and down, right?
I'm trying to remember what she put in there.
That's what they are.
Yeah, they are triple hung. Uh-huh. But I wanted to point that out. I think that's so cool that you can open the thing up and just mm-hmm. walk right mm-hmm. in.
Yeah.
And get that.
The palace has that.
Yeah.
Monticello has that.
The Washington Place has that.
Mm-hmm. It's very rare out here, though. Even back then.
Here. Well, what did they tell you at the register about this? I don't know if they called it discontinuous.
Yeah, that's my question, actually.
Yeah, he said, because I was trying to anticipate these kinds of things, because I didn't want to end up with the wrong form. And Paul said, just go ahead and put it on one. He says it's an integral part. So
why isn't it being nominated as a district? Like a discontinuous?
Well, it was our understanding from what he said that just go ahead and use the regular form. So
I know, the regular form is used for district, though.
Yeah. So you check buildings instead of district, right? It's on page 7. So I still have the same question, because you're including the
There subject. Is a proviso for discontinuous district.
Yeah, that's
why. Well, this is why, again, we're just trying to touch base with everybody. And if it's the board's feeling that it should be a district, we'll go ahead and change that. I don't think Paul's going to have any. We're sitting in Washington, we'll have any problem with it.
We've researched this distinction between a district and a building when there are multiple buildings. And again, we talked to NPS, and their take was if it's something that's a single use and a single owner, it fits better within a building as opposed to a district where you've got multiple types of buildings with multiple owners. And that was the distinction that they had made to us when we looked at it.
Because I did farmsteads, and they always would actually suggest that you're not supposed to build them as districts, and they insist that they be districts. So.
So you're expecting consistency from the National Park.
Changeover, too. I don't know who's our
yeah, and it, I mean, that's a very good point, that it varies even within the Park Service right now from review to review. And Paul does all of ours, and that makes us very lucky because he's actually rational. Some of the others are pretty horrifying to deal with.
That was again our understanding of what I did talk to him about this twice, both the non-contiguous and the fact that we talked about multiple.
Which buildings. Is the language of it?
I thought it was discontiguous, is my understanding.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
It's all fuzzy.
But I'm not married to it either way, but just. In my opinion, I'd like to see it as a discontiguous district, just because I think there's multiple properties. I think you just have different components to it that are discontiguous and have, I mean, just that just strikes me as, but again, I'm fine with it as buildings if that's what you folks want to stick with.
I guess under the state register, is there guidance within our state register?
With regard to district versus government, no.
Or
we rely entirely on the National Register.
Except for the absolute rule on 50 years.
Except for the 50 years, yes.
Okay. Would someone like to nominate?
I have a question about the motion, and that is whether it would be possible to move to... accept the nomination as written in 2020.
Did you say postpone it a month?
Or 2021, I guess, if they're 48 years now. But to accept it effective the date that they would turn 50.
Is it possible, for example, because this is kind of uncharted territory, to have it sent to the National Park Service? And then we resubmit it to the state of the year?
Well, couldn't we alternatively accept it as written? I mean, and I think the motions, just for consistency of even today, seem for possible future consideration, with the understanding that, as to the register right now, the period of significance would end in 69, but accepting the application as is, so you can either forward it now, and then, you know, if Paul will give you some wiggle room, or if you choose to delay your submission to NPS, then if you do that in 2 years. I mean, I think that wouldn't necessarily be within our jurisdiction, and I have some concern about approving a delayed approval, because the board may not be the same, so I don't know that we have...
I agree with Fish on that. But you could go right ahead with the National Register nomination right away.
Yeah.
I think the board, if the board chooses to act today, I think today has to be the date of the action. I don't think you can make an emotion that with future effect.
Fair enough. You can't commit some future group.
Well, we could recommend it be listed on the National Register, right?
Correct.
And then
the
question
is, with respect to the state register, because you have got a building that is statutorily excluded. But it wouldn't, in my view, would not affect the National Register nomination. Now, and honestly, I'd be surprised if the Park Service said, "Oh no, we think this should be this building should be excluded."
They wouldn't. I don't think.
I'd be shocked if they did.
Me too. We recommend that this property be listed in the National Register of Historic Places under criteria A and
C.
Okay.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion?
I do have a question. Yes. Do we have to caveat the difference between that there might be some inconsistency between the state and the national, even if we're accepting it as is to be forwarded to the national?
We're not. I didn't make a motion for the state.
Right? Oh, okay.
It's just the feds.
Oh, okay. Then.
And then you would bring it back in 2 years to the state.
And okay. If we have something definitive, again, and maybe I can ask Paul to put something in writing about building versus district. That way, you know, it'll make it easier for the next board.
And I think if it's listed in the National Register, it's kind of secure, it's seemingly secure for the next board to put it on the state register.
Well, hopefully, it will stand up. Hopefully. Okay. So, did you vote?
No, I just had a question, but I'm clear now.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, call for the question. All those in favor of this nominee, raise your hand. All those opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, one quick question. So is it going to go up as a district, or is it going to go up as...
I would just say extend it as a single building nomination, because that's what he said before. If he wants to... tell us he's changed his mind. He's the gatekeeper. So.
Yes. If they were to do that, I would expect them simply to say, you know, they do have a form of supplemental listing record where they say, you know, basically, it's going to be listed, but we've got these additional considerations. But I wouldn't expect it to come back.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Ross, thanks for everything you're doing.
Yeah.
You and Laura.
Oh, that's coming along really good.
It's going quite wonderful.
Thank you very much. We couldn't do it without you guys. Thank you.
The next nominee is the Judd Building at 851 4th Street Mall, Honolulu.
Revival, and it was built in 1899. The Judd Building is a refined Beaux-Arts style building with two main facades flanking a chamfered corner. At the time of the construction, it was the tallest building in Honolulu at 4 stories and was also the first office building built exclusively for rental tenants. The Judd Building is located on the southeastern corner of the intersection of Merchant Street and 4th Street Mall in downtown Honolulu. The land on which the Judd Building stands was purchased by Dr. Jarrett Judd in 1861. The Dakin Fire Map that you see here from 1891 shows that by that date, the lot was occupied by Dr. McKibben Drugstore, W.O. Smith, and Bellick Law Offices, and a building just labeled as offices, a shed, and storage building. Construction of the Judd Building was financed by the Judd Building Company, established in 1898 by Chief Justice Albert Judd, and all of the small one-story buildings on the parcel were demolished to build what the newspaper called a much-needed office building on the site, which Albert had inherited from his father, Dr. Jared Jones. Next door was the Sangenwald Drugstore, which was demolished in 1898 to make way for the current Sangenwald building. The 1906 map notes the occupants or owners' names on the Jet Building as well as its neighbors. At the time of the Jet Building's construction, or Jet Block as it was called, most of downtown Honolulu was occupied by one- and two-story frame businesses and residential buildings. A four-story brick and stone office building was very novel, and it was described as the beginning of Honolulu's skyscrapers. It was marketed as thoroughly modern with an electric elevator, scientific lighting and ventilation, plate glass, iron columns, and Roman brick. The Jet Building's first renters included C. Brewer and Company, Alexander and Baldwin, and a little bit later, the Bank of Hawaii followed, where they established the most modern bank vaults of the time to keep ahead of the wiles of the burglar and the destructiveness of fire. The building opened for business in March of 1899 and cost $58,000 to build. Bank of Hawaii purchased the building in 1910 and they moved into their own, in 1910, and they had their offices on the first floor at that corner there. But then they moved into their own dedicated building in the corner of King and Bishop Street in 1927. Oh, I can't really read those. The Jet Building was designed by Oliver Trapagan. Trapagan came to Hawaii in 1897 from Minnesota, where he was already an established architect. His Hawaii firm was one of only three at the time, and his experience garnered him significant projects from the outset. He was only in Hawaii for 10 years, but made a significant impact on the built environment here, as you can see from some of his representative buildings. And there's a list, and sorry you can't read it, but it's quite an extensive list for just the 10 years that he was here. Buildings attributed to him include obviously the Jet Building, the Moana Hotel, Kaka'ako Pumping Station, the Hackfield Building, Lewis and Cook Building, and the Paloma Fire Station. Okay, photographs of the building. Originally 4 stories tall with a basement, fifth story was added sometime between 1914 and 1927, and believe it or not, we could not narrow it down, you know, to a shorter time span. We just could not find it.
So there was a previous?
What?
There was a previous fifth story before this fifth story
was
added?
There was a fifth story addition somewhere between 1914 and 1927.
Okay, that was going to be my question, because I was thinking, oh, where's that fifth story?
Well, we were talking yesterday, and maybe you weren't there yet, but you can actually see the coins.
I heard inside, that part, but I didn't know what you meant.
Inside the sunroom, solarium, whatever you want to call that. So it is still up there, some of the original features of that later history.
Was it set back, or was it at the plane of the building?
That cornice piece that the solarium is built on actually stuck out from the fifth floor a lot more than it does now. So it had this sort of prominent
Belvedere
cornice that they just popped that glass on, I guess.
You mean the cornice down below on the bottom right?
Yeah.
I see. You don't know what was the earlier fifth story addition. You don't know what that looked like at all.
Not exactly, other than the fact that it was mimicking the coins and that sort of thing. We could not find any pictures.
And you suspect that the bigger cornice was taken off at that time, in 1914-ish time, in order to accommodate the fifth one?
That is possible, but can you see? Let's back up. Can you back me up? There, see that? That's the bigger cornice.
But you think that was taken off in 1914 then, when they put on the fifth floor?
I think so.
That we can no longer see.
Right. Okay. That would make sense. We had some other corners was put there that was also outset from that fifth story addition. Thank you. Let's see, where were we? It was designed with two primary facades along Merchant Street and Fort Street. At the time of building's construction, Fort Street was a major downtown thoroughfare. The building consists of 6 bays on Merchant Street and 5 bays on Fort Street. The foundation is made of coral rock. The first floor is bluestone, and the remaining floors are yellow Roman brick. The Roman brick is basically just a long, skinny brick. It has a structural steel frame with concrete floors, and that the decoration we see on it is sculptural terracotta. And let's see what else. The ground floor originally had 5 offices, and the remaining floors each had 10 offices that were convertible into larger suites. The interior was always meant to be convertible based on the needs of the tenants. And this is one of the back sides. You can see the brick now painted, so the standard linen gone. Here's the actual rear that is the Seed Brewer building. The primary entrance for the first floor was on that chamfered corner serving both avenues. But this entrance was closed in 1913 by the Bank of Hawaii, and the entrance that we went in through the lobby yesterday was one entrance, and then an entrance was created near the stanchion wall building, and this one was closed. The openings align both horizontally and vertically, but detailing varies by floor, which is typical of this style. And changes to the facade. All the original windows have been replaced, but the openings remain in their original locations and in their original sizes. The ground floor was heavily modified in 1978-1979. They were square top windows. I think you had asked me that yesterday if they were arched windows, but no, they were square top windows, and they replaced with arched windows. And a smooth stucco finish was applied over the brick on the first floor. And as we were just talking about, the fifth floor was changed to a solarium during this 1978-1979 project. And it consists of thin-span tinted windows. The roofline mimics the original parapet cornice of the fourth floor. And I just wanted to say that the fifth floor addition, although not ideal by today's standards, actually does represent the historic preservation guidelines for additions at the time. I have a quote here from the 1983 Secretary of Interior Standards for Historic Preservation Projects that says, "Design for new work may be contemporary or may reference design motives from the historic building. In either case, it should always be clearly differentiated from the historic building." So doing something modern on a historic building was considered appropriate at the time. The interior, like I said, was always intended to be customized by the individual tenants. And the lobby and the upper floor offices, originally on the 4th Street Mackay corner of the building, the lobby remains in its original location. Sorry, I read that sentence wrong. The entrance has changed, but the original stairway at the ground level remains, and the original elevator has been replaced. The vintage of the current Art Deco elevator is unknown, but those doors are not original. And here is the plaque for the Jed building. There's someone. Was that you, Bill?
No, this was just because it was on the National Register, so
okay.
I only it's did the narrative history. Ones that were part of the Preserve America project.
Oh, okay. Okay. The Jed building is significant under Criteria A at the state level for its role in the urban development of downtown Honolulu and its association with the businesses that shape the Hawaiian economy. The period of significance is 1899, which is its construction date. But with significant dates that include 1914 to 1927, when the fifth floor was added, and also the 78-79 exterior changes. The building has undergone these exterior changes over the years, but retains varying degrees of the seven aspects of integrity. Obviously, its setting has changed dramatically since those days. The Jed Building is a contributing resource of the Merchant Street Historic District, which was recently amended and updated. If approved, the district will now be called the Merchant Street Commercial and Civic Historic District. The Jed Building was added to the Hawaii Register in 1972, but it's believed to be one from the group that, from that time, whose nominations were removed from the register are now excellent candidates for renomination. So a bunch of things were removed in 1972, and this was
all because of lack of owner.
Right.
Is that not?
Right.
And so this is not on anymore. Okay.
Right. Here's another couple pictures, then and now. And that's all I have.
I have a question. Who rented this building? Were they a mixed bag of people, or were they just people with money and just Caucasians?
You mean other than the ones that I mentioned, the big companies?
Yeah.
There's, unlike the building next door, where they listed in the newspaper all of the tenants, they did not do that for this building, at least not that we could find. And so I don't know who else was in the building. I'm assuming, you know, various lawyers and, you know, just like next door.
The city directories aren't searchable. Just curious, anybody who's been doing this more recently, because they would presumably list the addresses. Of
because I didn't actually write this nomination.
I know you did.
And so I asked about that, and I was told that they couldn't find anything. So
just
the ones that
showed up in the paper. I was just going to say, because that building was sort of very mysterious as a local person, and then all of a sudden you hear a lot about it coming out. Before that, it was kind of like, that's not your business, then all of a sudden it pops up, and that's the reason I'm kind of curious as to who was involved with the building.
Well, I don't know about that.
I got to admit, I'm surprised there's not sometime between 1914 and 1927, fifth floor was added.
And I actually
and
did.
Why would there not be any picture of it between 1927 and 1978 when they somehow did something new?
I had that same question, and I researched the newspapers, I mean, for hours, and found nothing.
There's no pictures taken.
I went to the archives myself, you know, because I had these questions because I knew I was going to be here talking to you. And I went to the archives, and I researched the newspapers and literally found nothing else.
What about the Nancy? What about the Nancy Bannock stuff in the 60s? You didn't look at this building?
I mean, the pictures that you have that were there was what the archives had.
She went out like in the 60s, in early 70s, she photographed all those buildings downtown. If the addition that you're referring to is 78, 79.
I mean, it
is a little important because, let's say, is that just new fenestration on an existing, and was the cornice removed in 27? That actually makes a difference to me in reviewing it, because otherwise I don't feel that, I mean, other than like you say, it should be contemporary, but then you're pointing out that part of it's original, might include the cornice above it as well. Mm-hmm.
I'm with you, because I have the same kind of questions. I didn't see how there could be these gaps in the photographic record, if nothing else, which the newspaper was always taking pictures of what was happening in construction. That's why we have so many pictures of all these houses in Manoa and all of this. And I was just baffled.
Right.
I don't know why.
Seems like the survey would. When was the HAB survey done there? The
HAB survey was done in the
87.
80, yeah, something.
That's
like
when
that.
The drawing was dated.
Yeah.
I thought they came earlier and did some.
No, it was just one time Bob Diebner.
We just donated some photos that were up in slide form to the archives, so they're not yet available probably for viewing.
So
I don't know if there is anything
about
this building, but it's possible.
I was straining there because you could see the Stangenwall building in that long shot, and you saw that this one still was at four stories.
Yep. Because I figured there had to be a picture somewhere of that fifth story, and I
And like I told you yesterday, that building on the corner of Bethel Street on Merchant, in 1910, they added an extra story, and it's in a somewhat different vocabulary and things like that.
Yeah, there was nothing in the paper about the 78, 79 changes. I guess during that kind of boom period, it was just another building being renovated. So that's kind of understandable. But putting the fifth story on such a significant building downtown in that early time period, you would have thought it would have made a paper.
Like I said, it makes kind of a difference for my judgment, because if the cornice was altered in 1920 or so, that kind of means that it was less altered.
I have that book.
Like I said, I think for me it makes somewhat of a difference, because if that cornice was reduced in 1914, 1927, and this is just a cladding over an existing fifth floor, that to me would strike me as having more integrity. Mm-hmm. So the two problem areas for me is the ground floor and the top.
Looks like they just added glass over the existing fifth floor, so it would seem unreasonable that if that cornice was already there and then there was a fifth floor above, that they would actually come and take that
right
off.
The logic says that.
Yeah.
But to me, if there's an existing fifth floor and that's just glass masking it,
yeah,
that means the building's got more integrity. But.
Yeah, and we just don't know whether, because if you look at the San Juan building, for example, they took off that balcony because it was,
right,
you know, they were worried it was going to fall. Uh-huh. So that same sort of situation could have happened with this building, because that was a pretty formidable cornice up there. But we couldn't find any record of it.
Do you know if you go into the fifth floor inside, can you see the remnants of the
I believe that's what I was told. I didn't go up there personally.
So in which case you wouldn't
be
wanting to.
Isn't that where Strategies 360 is? If that is, I've been up there then, and it was pretty brand new. They just redesigned the whole thing. If that's
well, you can see it through the glass from the ground floor.
Yeah, from outside.
Yeah. My point would be, then you wouldn't want to be promoting it as an appropriate new addition, because that's not what it would be.
Oh, I'm not saying it's appropriate.
I mean, you know what I mean? You mentioned the standards of 1983.
Yeah, I don't.
Do you follow what I mean? I mean that it is a new addition. If it's not a new addition, we shouldn't be calling it a new addition. It's just the glazing over of an existing.
Oh, I see. It's a matter of semantics that way.
But semantics masking something kind of significant.
Well, we have the drawings from the 79 edition.
Does it show what as is?
I'd have to look again.
And I think that's important. Myself.
Does it show as is? Oh, the way it looks now?
No, at the time they began the project.
Oh. We don't have any demo drawings.
But sometimes an architect will show what's there.
Right, yeah.
And then show what they're going to do.
I don't think we have a full set.
Does anybody else understand what I'm trying to do?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
I've got 10 minutes.
Yeah. Are there any other questions? Would someone like to nominate the nominee?
You want to get it back on the National Register and listed on the State Register?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I move that we place the Judd Building on the State Register of Historic Places under Criteria A,
so we're thinking that it was one of the
and recommend it for the National Register.
Is it A, or is that the criteria?
Yes.
Okay. It has been moved and seconded.
Who's the second?
Paul.
It has been moved and seconded, and now open for discussion.
Ironically, the thing that's most interesting about it is the architecture, but that's somewhat incomplete. But even in its incomplete state, it's quite interesting. Now, I would call it Bozar, not Boar.
Oh, sorry.
And I don't think it's structural terracotta. Is it? No, it's decorative.
Did I say structural? Oh, sorry.
Do you think it should be also under criteria C?
I almost think C is what carries it, as opposed to A myself.
And I made that argument myself, but...
I like it because...
1889. And I
99.
Like...
99.
1899, excuse me. I like the way it maintains its character, and it was a wonderful addition to Honolulu, and I still think it is. And I like its architecture, in particular those blemishes that they used to... Well, in the top, you have some street, you always see it, but... The way the whole architecture feature, it's a really beautiful building, yes. I think, stand alone by itself. So architecturally, I think it adds so much more to Honolulu.
Call for the question?
Just before you do, would the board be interested in adding criterion C so that it's both A and C? Does that take an amendment?
Yes, you have to amend the motion.
Okay, I move to amend the current motion to add criterion C so that it would be both on the local level, criteria A and C.
Thank you very much. Is that okay with you, amendment?
Okay,
you guys. All right, good. Okay, it's been moved and modified. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I just think it lacks information.
Opposed? Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I got tender nomination.
We'll take a quick 5 minute break.
Moving on, if we don't know.
Information on the history of the building at all.